You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Hear elevated conversation on crucial issues. Boyd Matheson on Inside Sources.
Well, the battle between Hamas and Israel, the conflict inside of Gaza, of course, has caused ripple throughout the Middle East. The U.S., of course, continuing to defend and back Israel as an ally. And, of course, that has riled a few of the other groups, particularly groups like the Houthis, the Yemen-based group that has sabotaged multiple international trade routes, as well as a number of attacks since October the 7th against American troops and our allies. And in response to that, President Biden has responded in kind, green-lighting a lot of different attacks and airstrikes, keeping the Houthis at bay. And then the question becomes, okay, where does that presidential authority limit end, and where does Congress have to begin in terms of something that gets to that level? And it is one that we have to look at often and regularly, and one that I think has been ignored by Democrats and Republicans for a very long time. And someone who's got their eye on this specifically, someone we always turn to, Fiona Harrigan, associate editor at Reason, and has a great piece on this today. Are the strikes on the Houthis constitutional? And again, regardless of how you feel about all the other pieces, this is an important constitutional question. And Fiona, welcome back to the program. So give us your sense first, just in terms of what has been taking place since the October 7th attack and what's been going on with the Houthis in particular and what the U.S. response has been.
Right. So as you mentioned, for several months now, the U.S. and its allies have been conducting strikes against the Houthis, which are an Islamist militant organization based in Yemen. It's been attacking commercial ships in the Red Sea, disrupting one of the world's most important shipping routes. And the Houthis claim that these attacks are a gesture of support for Hamas and its war against Israel. In turn, Joe Biden notified Congress of these airstrikes, notified Congress that these attacks would be happening. But very importantly, he didn't ask for authorization. And he said he was doing this to protect American citizens and the free flow of international commerce. But it's really important to mention that Congress has the full power delegated by the Constitution to declare war. And his not asking for authorization is something that's really peeved several lawmakers. There's a coalition that wrote this letter in January saying no president, regardless of political party, has the constitutional authority to bypass Congress on matters of war, that robust debate is necessary before these actions should be carried out. And it's raised a lot of questions about the president's war-making abilities and whether war powers are essentially have gone too far for the president.
Yeah, and so let's unpack that just a little bit. You reference, of course, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. That is why Congress has that particular authority. Walk us through, we've had this thing really back since 1973, the War Powers Resolution. Kind of walk us through how we've gotten to this point and how that's evolved over time.
Right. And it's important to mention that according to that constitutionally delegated authority, Congress has issued its last declaration of war officially. It was over 80 years ago during World War II. So it's been a long time since we've really abided by the standard that was outlined by the Constitution. Since then, there have been a number of kind of piecemeal authorizations and piecemeal legislation authorized by Congress to give the president more authority to act unilaterally. Some of that comes through the 1973 War Powers Resolution, which Biden cited to justify these strikes against the Houthis. That requires that presidents notify Congress of any military action within 48 hours. But it does have a high burden of proof, essentially. It requires that there be a national emergency where the U.S. is under imminent attack. And these lawmakers who wrote this critical letter in January say, no, that's not the situation we were in with the Houthis. It might be horrible and disruptive, but it wasn't as urgent or as imminent as you would have us believe. And then following that, there have also been these authorizations for the use of military force. And these are kind of what give the president the most power in modern war making. Right. So we have the 2001 AUMF which was passed in the wake of the September 11th attacks to give the president the authority to use, quote, all necessary and appropriate force against parties involved in those attacks. And that is obviously very, very broad phrasing, and it's been used broadly as well, over 40 operations in over 19 countries. Mm. So it's super broad, and it negates Congress's role in warmaking, and it takes a lot of the debate that we would expect to see before these huge events out of the hands of lawmakers and away from the people.
Yeah, I think that's such an important part of that is, one, I always get nervous when they put in things emergency, because mm-hmm. we've so lost. I'm not even sure what an emergency is anymore, because it can be anything. It's a great excuse for Congress to spend money, for presidents to use vast swaths of executive power, and so we seem to be continuing to expand what that actually is. I think, as you pointed out, some of these may not have been emergency, but talk to us for a minute about why it's so crucial that Congress actually debate and declare these kinds of actions of war.
Well, it allows people to hold their lawmakers much more directly accountable, right? If these lawmakers are answering to constituents, it's much more direct as opposed to the president unilaterally acting. It's also a much more public form of debate. You know, Congress people will have to put their records on the line to defend a conflict and you know, so reap the consequences of unpopular decisions. So that kind of debate and that kind of exchange, I think, is just critical. And it's something that can really, it's a way to avoid entrenching the U.S. in conflicts that don't have attainable goals or incredibly relevant goals to the national interest. We can say that these things are emergencies or that they're important for the national interest, but it's another thing entirely to put American lives on the line and American tax dollars and everything that comes with these conflicts that get authorized without much thought.
Yeah, no question about that. We were talking in our previous segment about the Chevron doctrine, which also has the same kind of problem. Is if there's no transparency and there's no accountability to lawmakers, things are done very differently. And I think the same is true when it comes to these war powers. That if there isn't that open transparency, if there isn't a real debate in front of the American people, then no one gets held accountable in the end, and we just kind of keep trudging along. What should we be looking for moving forward? Is there any kind of traction or any kind of conversations in terms of changing the game when it comes to these kind of actions, again, regardless of who's in the White House and who's in control?
Right. You know, every couple of years, every year it seems, there are legislative efforts, often very interesting coalitions of progressives and constitutional conservatives and libertarian-leaning lawmakers to repeal these AUMFs and to essentially roll back presidential war powers. But they never get over the finish line for various reasons, one of which is that the president is never quick to give up power, which is unsurprising. You know, President Joe Biden has said that he would support repealing a 2002 AUMF, because, quote, it would likely have minimal impact on current military operations. So even when they do support these efforts, it's not for reasons of smaller government or reducing presidential war powers. So interesting to see whether any of that will change in the next couple of years, whether those arguments will strike a chord. But I'm not incredibly optimistic so far.
Yeah, so interesting. And this is another one of those things that, again, I don't think a lot of people woke up this morning thinking about, but it's one that we all need to think again about, because this is how we get to better governance and better results, whether it's dealing with a conflict half a world away or things that are happening right here in our own backyard. Fiona Harrigan, always appreciate your writing, your thinking on all of this. Fiona's the associate editor at Reason, a great writer, great thinker, and I always appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
All right, that's Fiona Harrigan once again from Reason, reason.com. You can check out all of her work there. And these are important things that we've been talking about in hour number one of the show today. Of course, we kicked it off with Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, along with Celeste Malloy from the 2nd Congressional District, talking about how do we do things and how do we do it a little bit better. And then looking at everything from the Chevron Doctrine, what's the power of the agencies, to what's the power of Congress when it comes to war, and the power of the president when it comes to taking action. All of those things are things that we've got to think again about as we move it forward. We'll be back with hour number two coming up next on Inside Sources. Stick around.
KSL FM Midvale.
KSL Salt Lake City.
From the KSL Common Spirit Health Studios, this is KSL News Radio.
Utah's news, traffic, and weather station.
It's finally time to say goodbye to the snow and hello to spring, and right now is the best time to spring into adventure in an RV from a Motorsportsland RV Center. Through this week, come check out Motorsportsland's season kickoff event and find the RV you've been dreaming of. Save thousands and even tens of thousands off MSRP and find your next adventure at a Motorsportsland RV Center today.
Let Motorsportsland help you get away.
Motorsportsland.com.